I am his wife. I am only his wife. This is all I know how to say. To the policemen who come to the house, who take me to the police station, who ask me questions, I say over and over, I don't understand. I am only his wife. And they both look at me, the fat one with the mustache and the thin one with the coarse ginger hair. They look at me as though I am a child they are disappointed in. A policewoman is sent to sit with me, and the men leave us together. The woman has skin like white dough, dense and soft, and a purple birthmark that creeps down her neck and hides in her blouse. She fetches me a cup of tea and asks if I want to visit the facilities. This is the only thing she says in her hard London voice. As I am washing my hands, I steal a glance in the mirror and I see the policewoman's face inside it. She is flushed with excitement. I'm all right, I say to the woman in the mirror, speaking over the noise of the running water. I shall be quite all right. This is just a misunderstanding, that's all. I'm his wife. I know him. The policewoman leans against the wall and folds her arms as I dry my hands on the damp towel. She doesn't look at me again after that. I am taken back into the cold grey room where I finish the weak cold tea. And after a while, the men come back and the questions start again. Over and over and over, and I clench my fists and stare at the crack in the floor that is shaped like a wishbone, and I blink and blink. The thin one asks about dates, times. I shake my head. Then the fat red one asks about her, and I say, I don't understand. Why are you asking these things? They wait. And when I can bear the waiting no longer, I say, I knew about Miss Cade. I knew all about it. One of them coughs. I look up at them in turn. There was nothing in it. It was all quite... There was nothing in it at all. The fat one looks at me for a moment, then leans over and says something in his colleague's ear. I watch the thin one stand, watch him open the door. I watch him go out into the corridor. It looks easy, just to stand and leave like that. The fat one is reading his notes, tapping his pencil. As I watch, he licks a thick finger, turns a page. The finger goes to his temple and pushes the skin up and back so that it wrinkles. The door opens. The thin one comes back in and shakes his head. The fat one says, "For Christ's sake!" And a little dot of white spit lands on the table. He picks up his pencil, turns to a clean sheet of paper, draws three or four lines, along and then down, making rows of squares. He numbers each square, slowly, his little womanish mouth half open, while the thin one and I look on. Right, he says. Right. He touches the point of the pencil on one of the squares. Number 12. Do you know where your husband was on this date, the 12th of April? I say nothing. The pencil moves. What about the 13th and the 2 days following? And on this date? And this? I close my eyes. I do not want to think about those days. I can feel them staring. Then they push their chairs back with a shriek. I open my eyes and see them shuffle, bend their heads, mutter together. I look at my hands. One nail is broken and ragged, the skin beneath pink and blind. The questions begin again. I can't remember. It was nearly 3 weeks ago. How do you expect me to remember? I try to keep my tone even and polite, but they look at me with raised eyebrows, and now I am aware of the heat in my face and the wetness under my arms. I ask them again, how do you expect me to remember? I want to ask them to please leave me alone. Instead, I say, my husband was nowhere. He was with me. I look at them in turn. We were together the whole of that time. Surely now I will be able to go home. But then they say it. Why did you do it, Mrs. Ryan? They say. And what did you suspect? Then one of them says, now then, Mrs. Ryan, please try to be calm. Getting upset like this won't help. I try to tell him I am calm, but somehow I am on my feet and they are looking up at me in alarm. And then I am on the floor with my arms around my head. I can hear a low moaning noise, like an animal. It reminds me of something, but I can't remember what, and I tug at my hair, trying to remember. Then there are hands on my shoulders, and another man is there beside me. He has a kind face and white whiskers. I tell him I am trying to remember about the animal, and he nods and pats my arm, and I realise, how extraordinary, that someone has rolled up my sleeve and my skin is bare. As I look at my poor naked arm, the kind-faced man pulls back his hand and I see a glint, like a knife. I clutch at him and I whisper, "They are killing me," and he pats me again and smiles, and I am falling and falling, and as I fall I remember about the animal, and I remember that the noise was like a cow I once heard, whose calf had been taken from her. She lowed in distress all night and kept us awake. We were in the Lake District and the bed was lumpy, and it was before Judith was born. I try to tell them about the cow, but their faces are receding and the light is becoming brighter and more blurred, and I stare and stare, and then everything is white.